Wayne Butler, alcoholic.
Hey, Wayne.
I want to thank Harlan and Zan and the committee and all you volunteers that made this just, I'm going to try not to ruin your weekend. Isn't this great? How about a hand for the committee? How about a hand for the volunteers? I've got to tell you, I'm deeply moved. It was just 29 years ago that I was taken to a convention by my sponsor. I want to tell you, I have a sponsor. I have a home group. I have a sobriety date, November 8th, 1977. Haven't had any pills, powders, potions, or lotions. I believe I've needed them. I just ain't tuck them. I've been to every speaker, mainly because I'm sicker than most. I've been to all the Al-Anons, too. I'm sicker than I thought. I was an untreated Al-Anon until I drank. You know, Ellen, you just stopped the six-pack short of AA. Mary Pearl, I'm not sure about you. If you're new, you're the ones I'm here to talk to. The rest of you don't need a bit of my help whatsoever. If you're new and you're here, you must have a job, number one. Oh, by the way, I brought a newcomer with me. He doesn't want me to do this, but it's not his choice. I sponsor him. His name is Greg. Stand up, Greg. That's enough. He's sober 127 days. I've been his sponsor 126. Having been his sponsor 126 days, I deserve a purple big book. Getting all you people to feel sorry for him all weekend. He bought me a gift. I brought him as my guest, and he bought me a gift. I'd like to share with you his gift. I'll never part with it. I am going to try to share my experience, strength and hope, what I used to be like, what happened, what I'm like today. Where are you going, Harlan? Sure, get the kudos out of the way and leave. Uh-huh. Zan, you're staying, right? Okay. Okay. Boy, I have no idea. I called my sponsor before I came over here. My first sponsor passed away April 17, 2002, and I want to get that out of the way so I don't think about it for the next hour. I miss him a great deal. He was my sponsor for 29 years, 5 months, and 4 days, and I'm here to report to you that I worship the ground he walked on, and I'm not apologizing for that. He's not God, but he was his direct right-hand man because he got a load with this one. He tolerated me. You know, love and tolerance is our code. Some we love, some we tolerate, sometimes not at the same time. Now, I'm going to tell you why I have a sponsor specifically and why I have a home group and why I work the 12 steps, because I have my own methodology for treating my condition. Does anybody else have a self-imposed treatment plan? Huh? 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 Please call your sponsor. I'm going to tell you how I treat my condition, and you will automatically understand why I have a sponsor. I have a tendency to treat loneliness with isolation. I treat anxiety with caffeine and sugar. And I treat depression with country western music. I need a sponsor. If you're new, I want you to know I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, had no idea what was wrong with me. I want you to know something. I am among friends here. I'm among many people who not only I love, but love me back. It's an amazing thing. I look around this room, and I can't look in any quadrant where I don't see a familiar face. And you know, for somebody like me, you know what my sponsor said to me? He says, "Butler?" My other sponsor would have said, "Dummy." I'd passed it on. Seems to fit him better right now. My sponsor said, "My God, it's a long way from that dumpster you came behind Larry's Oasis to Seaside, Oregon." Last week I was in Sydney, Australia. I had the privilege of carrying the message. I got to tell you the truth. I had to touch me to make sure I was really there. And then I come to Seaside, and next week, if I don't drink or die, I'll be in the land of Mary Pearl. I'll be in Arkansas next weekend. How's that happen to a loser like me? And thank God you didn't call me a loser in AA. You didn't call me a loser. I called me a loser. If you'd have called me a loser, I couldn't have stayed for your program. Instead, you told me I was sick. I didn't like that either. But it beat loser. And by the way, in case you might want to know why I asked them to turn the lights back on, it's so I can see you, so I can judge you back. And besides that, if all the lights on me, it's once again about me. And that's dangerous. I used to drink when it was all about me. I've got a condition called alcoholism, and to my knowledge, there's no cure for it yet. There's a lot of people out there trying to find some help for us. But thank God we have this book into the fourth edition, hasn't been changed yet. So if I share something with you tonight that doesn't sound vaguely familiar to this, I'm probably into my thinking. And I'm a thinker. I'm a thinking thinker. I am an Al-Anon's dream. I mean, no disrespect. I'm going to talk about my condition. I'm not here to talk about my family's. Alcoholics Anonymous is about me sharing about my drinking, what I was like, what happened to me, and what I'm like today. And I'm going to tell you, both my mom and dad are passed on. I believe there's a part of them that sees me here with you guys tonight. I have to believe that because they both passed on before I was much recovered in AA. I was 7 years sober when my mom passed on, and I just wasn't equipped to deal with it yet. I get to go to her grave every year and talk to my mom. I go to my dad's grave every year and I talk to my dad. My brother and sister are still alive. My brother's sober 25 years. He goes to one meeting a week, whether he needs it or not, and thinks I'm obsessed. My sister's an intense neurotic for which Valium works. And she's a social drinker. She's the type alcohol works for her the way it's supposed to. I know that because she says things like this after one: "I better slow down. I'm driving tonight." I always found it better to have five or six when I'm driving. Just adjust. When you're a policeman, we call this probable cause. You know, I spent most of my life wondering what's wrong with me. I remember I grew up in an alcoholic home, and as I said just a moment ago, I don't want to go into all that. If you come from an alcoholic home, suffice it to say, we probably relate. But victims don't stay sober, ladies and gentlemen. That's my experience. That does not mean I don't have some of those goodies in my history. But the problem with having a foot stuck in the past, I've got no future or no current, I'm all caught up. Victims really don't stay sober in AA because I'm so busy thinking about what they did to me that I don't have to be in the right here and the right now. And I want to thank my sponsor for that little gift of taking away my victimology. And I'm a good victim. We'll get to that in a minute. I'm at home. I'm around 8 or 9 years old. I'm looking in my mirror. And I remember saying to myself, Butler is too bad, pal. It's going to be a long life. And it's going to be lonely because you are butt ugly, pal. I don't know where that came from. Mama Butler never sat me down and said, oh, you poor little son of a, oh my God, you are so ugly, child. Just out of mercy alone, I'd put you back if I could. That's not what my mother said, but that's what I heard. When she said, I love you. Any of you have any complications of hearing? Now, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous having been in therapy most of my life. I've been in 17 psych wards. I like it there. One of our speakers, was it Roger? Boy, he's like an institution himself, isn't he? There he is. I've been in 17 of them. 15 were self-sign-in. Now, I'm going to tell you why in case you have a little slip. Given the fact, the way I drank, the way I acted, and the way I smelled, and the way I looked out on the street, I couldn't get a date to save my life. But you put me in a co-ed psych ward. With no teeth. See, I found out something about your teeth. Ignore them. They will go away. I am like a man who's lost his teeth. I can't grow new ones. So I'm running around that psych ward like this. By the way, ladies, AA can be a lot like that. By the way, ladies, if you're in your first year, if I perhaps come upon you at the dance, I have something I want you to do. Now, if I come up to you and say something like this, and I might even posture a little bit, I might go like this. I might say something like this. Hey. You want to go have coffee? And talk about God? I told you I had something I wanted you to do. If I do that, run! There's something wrong with me. I'm about a half a bubble out of plum on a good day. I don't know what's wrong with me. I feel terrible inside. I don't even know how to communicate that. I look around. I look at you. I see me. I feel different. Somehow you look all wrapped together. Somehow you look intelligent. Y'all look, and I'm 9. You look secure. I don't know those words. It's just a feeling. Everybody looks put together but me. I constantly wonder what's wrong with me. I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know what alcoholism looks like. If you will, allow me a metaphor. I look at it now like alcoholism for me is like the tip of an iceberg. 10% visible. That's the part the world treats. That's the part I treat. Drunk driving, domestic violence, absenteeism, lost jobs, lost homes, bad credit, bankruptcy. That's what the world sees and that's what they try to treat, the alleged problem. The dilemma is that ain't what sank the Titanic. It wasn't the part they saw that sank her. It's that itty bitty bit below the surface that nobody sees with the human eye. And I got to tell you something, ladies and gentlemen, prior to and long after I came into AA, I was suffering from what can't be seen with a human eye, and I didn't know that. And the only thing that seems able to catch up to that invisible part of my problem is Budweiser. I love Budweiser. I love it today. I love the commercials. I love the colors. I love the logo. It's a B, Butler. It works. I love the Clydesdales. I weep when I see them in a parade. When I pass by a Budweiser billboard, I swear to God, I sometimes have to slow down and have a moment of silence. That's not natural. You see, when I drink Budweiser, something happens to me that isn't biochemically indicated to happen. And I found out in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it only happens to, well, the big book doesn't say 1 out of 10, but that's what the experts say. All I know is there's a lot of people that can drink that don't have this effect. Somewhere between 4 and 5 Budweisers, I guess a good look and I can't stand it. I was 17 years old. I'm in the retarded class. I mean no disrespect if you have a child that's special. Back then, they didn't call it nothing but retarded. And in 8th grade, I got diagnosed retarded. That's what they did with kids that had a bit of a spin attached to them. Living in an alcoholic home. I got diagnosed mentally retarded, got put in a retarded class in 8th grade, and I improved. Spent my entire high school years in retarded class, ladies and gentlemen. We didn't study. They didn't want us thinking. We played putt-putt golf. You might wonder, and by the way, I improved. We had a chaperone named Tom all through school. As he kept going up in the grades, he kept taking us, and he took us on field trips, and he liked me. He said I was the brightest of the bunch. Tom was my protector. You see, there's things called bullies out there. Remember, I already told you, I'm not a victim. I'm just reporting. A lot of bullies in school like to pick on the special kids. There was something so fearful inside me, I couldn't fight back, wouldn't fight back, wouldn't even think about fighting back. I just tuck it. And I remember when the wrestlers got a hold of me one night, and we had got this new shipment of hall lockers, the tall ones, they installed. And they locked 3 of us, 1 of us each, in a tall locker Friday night. They didn't find us till Monday. I came out of that locker on Monday different than I went in on Friday. That did not make me alcoholic, but I did learn about resentment. Tom found all them wrestlers and beat the hell out of them. Get them, Tom! And then I used to lie to Tom on a regular basis. They were up to it again, Tom. Senior dancing. I haven't drank yet. You see, I saw what happened in that home, and somehow, without me knowing it, I associated the insanity of that family with brown whiskey, because that's what my dad drank. And I associated all of that insanity because I have no clue what alcoholism looks like. And most of those folk, even today, can't even put that name to it, because we are so uninformed still. I don't know what's going on. Tom, he takes me to the senior dance. Now, I weigh 120 pounds soaking wet. Biggest thing on my body is an infected pimple. Tom's taking me to the senior dance. I'm going with Tom. I'd drink battery acid if Tom asked me to. Tom saved my life from them bullies. I'll do anything Tom says. I didn't know I was being prepared for sponsorship. Tom takes me to the senior dance, and I'm standing up against the wall. Tom walks up to me and he's got something in his jacket. He pulls out a long brown bottle with a red, white, and blue label. Budweiser. He said, "Here, kid, drink." I get called kid a lot. He said, "Here, kid, drink this. It'll make you feel better." I drank it right down because Tom said so. I said to Tom, I said, "Tom, that tastes terrible. I want a Pepsi Cola." Tom said, "That's okay, kid. You'll get used to it." Now, Tom is a social drinker even today. He's only been drunk by his own word once in his lifetime, and here's what happened to him. He got drunk, disorientated, peed in his dresser, and almost went crazy trying to flush it. And he said, "I ain't doing that again," and Tom never has. He's a successful businessman. He doesn't know what happened to me. We don't talk about AA. He thinks AA is a de-retarding program is what he thinks. He doesn't need to understand. I need to do it. He doesn't need to do it. But Tom said, "That's okay, kid. You'll get used to it." And by God, I did. Somewhere between 4 and 5, I learned how to dance. I eyeballed me a blue-eyed blonde dancing with some loser. I walked right on the dance floor and asked if I could cut in, and she let me. I now know she felt sorry for me, but I didn't know that at the time. I thought I was pretty good looking. We danced the rest of the night, found out later that night sex meant two people. I didn't know that. They didn't teach the kids in the special class sex ed. They didn't want us reproducing. She ruined my sex life. Right out of the gate. See, I've been having sex since I was 13, and I thought I was good at it. Don't look away. And you know, I didn't know this, but from that day to the day I took my last drink, I did not know this. It's in our book, but I didn't know this. From that day to the last day, I was chasing the same thing, the effect produced by alcohol. I didn't know that. And I chased it from that senior dance through Vietnam, through two broken marriages, right into a dumpster behind Larry's Oasis in Moline, Illinois. I got to tell you something. It's hard for me to look back. Who was it you, Mary Pearl, that talked about? One of the speakers talked about making themselves be okay with where they are. Do you know I was okay in my dumpster? I was. It was okay. I remember the night I had a knock on my dumpster lid. I was home. I was wondering who was out there. I knew it wasn't a dumpster pickup man. When you're sleeping in a dumpster, you better know when they're coming. Curiosity got the best of me. I opened up the lid. You know who's looking down at me? It's my daddy. My dad had a look in his eye I didn't understand. I didn't know he'd gone to this thing called A&A. I didn't know he was paying a 12-step call on me. I didn't know that. He didn't volunteer any information. I was on need-to-know basis. You know how they are. Don't tell newcomers nothing. Why? Shut up. Why? Shut up. Why? Do you know we have slogans in AA, by the way? Do you know where we got our slogans? We got them from Al-Anon, didn't we? We did. You know the slogans on the wall? We borrowed them. We stole them from Al-Anon. They must have got together one night. Forgive me, I don't mean no disrespect. They must have got together and said, let's have some fun. Let's make up some slogans. Let's do easy does it. And then after they realized we done did that, they thought, but do it. And then live and let live. Maybe we'd mind our own business. One day at a time. But for the grace of God trying to let us know it wasn't me. And then the big one. They came up with this one for fun. Think. Think, think. Thank you. Thank you, Al-Anon, for think, think, think. And then they made the middle one bigger than the other two, so we think about that. And then our sponsor tells me, my sponsor says, don't think. What's right there? What do you mean don't think? It says think. I said don't think. Okay, and I think about why don't you want me to think? I mean, I'm a thinking thinker. There's something. I'm out of my mind. I don't know. I need a drink. I just do. I need to water it down. Ladies and gentlemen, I didn't know what I was afflicted with. And I don't mean no disrespect to those outside resources that try to help us, but unless you got it, you can't spot it. Unless you got it, you can't call it. I don't care who you are. You can be the biggest expert in the world, but if you ain't been down that path, I won't listen to you anyway. Matter of fact, I'll lie to you. I don't mean no disrespect. I've been to a lot of therapists. I have not once in my life found it necessary to tell them the truth. They may never let me tell me what you're thinking. No. I did once and I didn't get out for 6 months. How do you feel? Like slapping the snot out of you, Doc. That's how I feel. How's your wife? I know where you live, Doc. They'll give you a shot. Something terribly wrong with me. My dad looks down at me in that dumpster and he says, Wayne, I got no teeth. I smell. I weigh 146 pounds. He says, do you want to come home? And I looked around my little room. I said, no thanks, Dad. I'm doing fine. You all understand that. Them people out there can't grasp that. They don't even believe it when I say that story. The only reason you believe it is because you've either experienced it or seen it on a 12-step call. I jumped out of the dumpster that night because I knew my dad had a bead on me now. And I started that walk a walk that every man and woman in this room has made, be you alcoholic. And I'm not leaving you Al-Anons out either. That bottom can be started from a dumpster or a 3-inch carpet you're stuck on from puking the night before, or maybe that Cadillac you parked on the front porch. Bottom is relative to location, location, location. Mine started out in the dumpster. I didn't know that. I didn't know I was on my way to AA. If I knew that, I would have went the other way. I got lots of problems. I know I'm psychiatric, but I ain't no alcoholic, my God. There's something sweet about being manic depressive versus selfish, self-centered. I come walking up on this restaurant, a little after midnight, I suppose, and Harvey's Restaurant, Moline, Illinois. I look inside and I see this 800-year-old woman slowly, obviously, wiping down the coffee bar. Now, I'm not able to comprehend information well. What I thought was I could work her. You hear me? I went inside the restaurant with one motive in mind, to get something to eat. Maybe get a Pall Mall tailor-made cigarette, and maybe some pocket dough if she's really loose. I walk in, my smell got to the chair before I did. And one of they had those round stools with no seat belts. Sat on a stool and she comes waddling over to me with a glass of water. She sat down, she says, what can I do for you, sweetie? I thought, okay, this isn't going according to plan. She's got a smile on her face. So I went into my routine. The smell hit her. She didn't budge. You hear me? So I started telling her about the alcoholic home. Started telling her about the abuse in my perception. Told her about the violence, the beatings, the 3 men that sexually assaulted me from the time I was 8 till the time I was 13, which is the truth. Tears are starting to roll down and rise. And I tell her about the retarded class. That got her. I know I'm going to get a steak soon. And then I told her about Vietnam. And then I told her about the dumpster. I was working her. I'm even starting to cry now. It's moving me. You know, I found out later why she was crying. Because she was in Al-Anon. They should have to wear badges at work. They sneak up on you. They don't tell you they're in Al-Anon. They wait till you commit. So she waited till I committed. You know what she told me later? The reason she was crying is because Harvey, her husband, was having a hard time staying sober, and he needed a newcomer to work with. So she took me hostage. You know how they are. Gave me a couple of sandwiches to tide me over. Put me in the car out back so I could stay there for a while. She kept me hostage till Harvey came in. Harvey's about this tall. Now, I've had moments in my life where I knew I was ugly. Harvey helped me. Wow. Only an alcoholic of my type can look at a man who owns a restaurant, dressed well, doesn't stink except for aftershave. I'm standing there, 146 pounds, no teeth, and I stink, just came out of a dumpster, and I'm judging old Harvey. Harvey had this straight nasal passage with 2 golf balls. dimpled. Found out it was called whiskey nose in the winter. And he had black and brown and red blood veins running through his face and his nose. Kind of found out later that's called spider angiomas, which is later stage alcoholism, ladies and gentlemen. Harvey was dying. Harvey come up on me and he says, I heard you need some help. And I do. Boy, do I. I got no money. I'm hungry. And I need a cigarette. There was absolutely not one fiber of my being wanting help with a drinking problem. You see, the only problem I have with drinking is I don't got no money to buy no more. Other than that, I think I'm psychiatric. I have evidence. Harvey pulls his hand out of his pocket and he does the bum's handshake. I've done it hundreds of times, but it's not a bum's handshake in AA. It's a hand up, not a hand out. It's where you give a newcomer a couple of bucks so they don't have to beg for it. And he put a coin in my hand. I wanted paper. And I could tell by the feel it was too big to spend on anything. And he's trying to talk to me, but I'm concentrating on the coin. I open up my hand and there's this stupid brass coin that ain't worth nothing, I can tell. Because there's writing on it. You can't spend something. It ain't got no eagle on it. It's got these two A's. Thought, what is that? Harvey says, well, turn it over. Turned it over. And on the other side, it had this stupid prayer. God grant me something. And I read it. It didn't say nothing about money, food, or shelter. I wasn't interested in the religiosity of it in my mind. Harvey said, you take this coin tomorrow down to 410 16th Street about noontime. You tell them Harvey sent you. They're friends of mine. They'll be expecting you. He didn't tell me I was going to AA. He implied I was going to get a handout. He manipulated me. If he'd have told me I was going to AA, I would have never went. And I'll tell you why. I'm not alcoholic. I got problems. I got boatloads of problems, but I'm not alcoholic. He told me when I got there to look down on the basement doorway, because it's in the basement, of course. And he said there'd be a light bulb hanging on a cord. He said, if that light's on, go in. They're expecting you. The only reason I went there the next day was because I thought I was going to get a handout. I'm on the take. I'm a loser on the take. I just want for me. I got there the next day about noontime, like he told me. Found the address. It was in the basement of a condemned building. I looked down the cellarway, and there the light bulb was. The window, cellar windows were painted black. Found out that was for anonymity, so you couldn't see in. There was a little square scraped out, had a light bulb hanging on a cord. Harvey told me if it was on, go in. It wasn't on. It was flickering. Now, I'm not flexible enough to entertain the possibility it could be a short in the cord. I think it's code. I'm staring at that light. Harvey said, if it's on, go in. He didn't give me a contingency plan. He didn't say, by the way, if it's flickering. He didn't say nothing about flickering. So I'm waiting for it to stop flickering so I can go in. I'm out there doing what we now know as alcoholic neurobics. Because I'm watching that light and I'm into the light. And I'm out of my mind. I can't take it. I leave, go to Larry's Oasis, mooch a few Budweiser's, get oiled up, and now it's about 8 o'clock. Aren't these time frames interesting? Now I've talked to the guys at the bar, and they agree I got it coming. Go back there and make them pay. Because I told them where I went. I didn't know it was AA. I told them I went to get, he promised me, And then they all voted I should go. I agreed. I went. Now I'm on a head of steam. I don't care if the light's on or gone. I'm going in. I got back there and I went down that cellar doorway and I went in there like a bull in a china shop, because that's how I am. Failing to notice that the doorway, the door header at the basement is 5'10"-ish. I'm 6'3"-ish. I swear before God, I ran right into the door header with my eyebrow. The impact lifted me off of my feet and I slid into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm laying flat on my back. There was a round table. You know, they had round tables in Illinois so the devil couldn't corner you. There were 6 or 7 old men waiting to die, in my opinion. I slid right between 2 of them. And this old crusty one that made Harvey look good looking, he got up and he looked down at me and he went just like this. And then he growled, "Slide right in here, you big dummy." We got a wrench to fit every nut that comes in the door. I didn't like him around. They talked to you like a dog back then. I didn't like him. And then he's standing over me. I said, "My name's Wayne." He says, "I got it, dummy." "My name's Barney. I'm an alcoholic." "God, take it back. And I'm going to be your sponsor." Now we're getting somewhere. Because I know what a sponsor is. I've never been to AA before, but I played softball with Tavern Leagues. Our team always had a sponsor. They always paid our league fees. They bought our uniforms, and they bought the beer. I got up right off that floor, and I said, "Okay, let's get with this thing." Boy, did I make a misjudgment. I immediately began to hate this man. It didn't take long to go into full hate. I hate's too kind. I don't know how to put it. I tried to kill him. I didn't like him. For the next 5 years, I went to meetings drinking. Y'all said keep coming back, so I did. I tested you. For five years, I went to meetings almost every day. Sometimes I'd travel with him drunk. No one told me I couldn't be there. They just suggested I got to behave while I'm there. That's sometimes tough. Sometimes I could drink, sometimes I could behave. Sometimes I couldn't do it simultaneously. I heard there's no rules in AA, so I tested them. One night I came in drunk, about 8:15. Speaker started at 8 o'clock, and I want to be visible, which means I want attention. I come walking in my home group. I know there's no rules. You can't kick me out. I'll do whatever I want. I'll distract. I'll sing along. I'll make as much noise as I want. You can't do nothing about it because it's all about me. I'm a free man. That's all happening in milliseconds. It's even happening more so today, ladies and gentlemen. But they had a solution that I was unaware of. I come walking in about 8:15 and making noise, and this guy gets up out of his chair and he says, you gotta quiet down, you're disturbing this meeting. And all of a sudden that thing kicked in that we share. I didn't like him right away. And I said to him, "I don't want to." Another one got up, said, You gotta sit down. I said, I don't have to. Another one got up. "You gotta leave." Now, we don't kick nobody out of AA, no matter how deviant they might be. But we have a right to an undisturbed, undistracted message because the newcomers have enough going on in their mind to pay attention. They don't need you distracting them any further. So you got to leave. If you can conduct yourself accordingly, you can come back tomorrow. You're welcome to return. We don't kick nobody out. But you do got to go now. And I looked at him. I said, "You can't make me." "Oh, yes, they can." About 4 guys, Bob size. I don't know where they got them. They must have went to detox. I never saw them before. Each one grabbed arm and leg, talked some newcomer into holding the door open. I noticed as I flew by. And as I landed out on the sidewalk, I heard my sponsor yell out, "Keep coming back!" Four and a half years drinking. I'm not proud of none of this. I'm just sharing. I'm just saying. Boy, after hearing what... Bam, you're my hero. I feel for you. JD, right? What a whooping. Oh. I come into a meeting 4 and a half years drinking, and I walk past my sponsor, and I told you I got a hearing problem. My sponsor said to me, "You know what, dummy?" I said, "What?" He said, "This program tends to work better if you don't drink." I didn't know that. I've been going to meetings 4.5 years, and I've never once heard nobody say nothing about not drinking. And that startled me to such a degree that I reached down, I pulled that 357 out, I pointed it at my sponsor's face, and I fired a round off. I missed Barney 6 inches. They say if Barney would have been 6 foot tall, he'd be 6 foot under. I came to the next morning. It was my 17th trip to the psych ward at Franciscan Mental Health Center, Rock Island, Illinois. I was in 6-point leather restraints, tied to a steel bed in the center of a padded room, black and blue from head to toe from a little AA group therapy. I had things broke I didn't know I had. You AA people can find muscles we didn't know we had. Nurse comes into my secluded room, looks down at me. She says, "You got a visitor." You know who it was? Barney. I couldn't get rid of him. He was like a maggot after a bad piece of meat. I'll let you figure out which part I was. He walks into my room. I am immediately startled. What's he doing here? He's walking around my little bed, looking down at me going like this. And I'm thinking, you wouldn't be doing that if I wasn't tied down. He said, "Dummy." I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "There's something wrong with you." "Oh, I know." He said, "I don't even know if you're alcoholic. You might just be nuts." And I'm laying there thinking, you know, you can't talk to me like that. They got to let me out of here someday, and I know where you live. And that was just like he had ESPN. He says to me, "Dummy?" I said, "Yes, sir." He says, "You know, they've been talking about keeping you and studying you a while." He says, "Here's what I think. If they let you out of here, and I'm not sure they're going to, you really did it this time." He says, "But if they let you out of here, if you come with us, with me, do what we did and still do, I believe even you can get well." You wonder why I'm in Seaside, Oregon tonight. It's because of a man called William Barney Barnett that believed in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It says, I remember I asked him, I says, "What possessed you to come visit me the next day after what I did?" I said, "Weren't you afraid?" He says, "I ain't afraid of you." I said, "I am." I said, "How come you ain't afraid?" He says, "Because it's in the big book." I said, "What's in the big book?" He says, "It says, when we carry this message, we can go to the most sordid spot on earth and God will keep us unharmed. And you, bucko, are the most sordid spot I've ever been." You should know better than that, Tim. And then he went to the board of psychiatry, he got me released to him, and he took me home. I'm scared of him now. And it was 6 months later, he met me there when I got discharged. You would think I would stop drinking. You think that'd be enough? I meet Barney outside, and I know he owns me now because he's got papers. I say, "I'm his. I'm waiting for the lease." Instead, you know what he says to me? He says, "Dummy?" I said, "Yes, sir." At least that's what I heard. "I'll be at the meeting tonight. You know the way there." And then he left. And I went and drank. Ladies and gentlemen, I had no idea what had me in its grip. I don't know. I've had a lot of therapy. I've had a lot of talk therapy. I've had a lot of reasonalization. But you know what? There's something wrong with me that defies even that. The book even talks about... No, that's not God. That's somebody being rude. Oh, glad it wore out. My sponsor says I'm easily distracted by shiny objects. Six months later, I didn't know I was going to take my last drink. You see, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what's wrong with me. I still don't know. I was flabbergasted that I drank again, because now I'm putting the pieces together. I'm getting in trouble every time I drink now. But I can't give up my drinking, because unbeknownst to me, down here below the level of my consciousness, below the level of my consciousness, is something going on in here that nobody can see. It's beyond the visible eye. And the book talks about that. It says that I suffer from a soul sickness. Boy, I'm glad you guys were here for me to help me with this book and with this program, because I have no clue. There's no way that I can see that 90% below the level of the surface of that iceberg. See, you could call me a ship without a rudder, and I'm the captain, and I'm the crew. And I look at that iceberg and I think, I can get around it. Give me a couple of beers and I can get through it. It's beyond reason. Now I'm going to explain to you what I think about that. In the book Alcoholics Anonymous, it says I suffer from a soul sickness. See, in the book it says the problem centers in the mind, doesn't it? My first reaction is, I think that means my thinking. How about you? You hear that everywhere. That is my thinking. I'm here to report to you that that was not the intent of that input into the big book. Centers in the mind. Go back to 1936 when they started writing and using the Oxford English Dictionary. I needed to know this because I don't know what's wrong. It looks like my thinking's the problem. It looks like my feeling is a problem. It looks like what I hear is a problem. What's wrong with me? How come I'm drinking again after I fired a weapon at my sponsor during a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? There's something wrong here. Looked up the definition of soul, and it says it's the seat of man's and woman's thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and actions. I have a soul sickness. I have distorted perception of reality. How I see, feel, hear, and think is distorted. Therefore, thinking is not my problem. It's a symptom. You try to treat my thinking, I'm in therapy again. That's why we tell newcomers, we'll do your thinking for you. You just go clean the floor. Then I start thinking about why you want me to clean the floor. Clean the floor yourself. You see, thinking is not my problem, it's a symptom. Feeling is not my problem, it's a symptom. How I hear you is not the real problem, it's a symptom. And if I try to treat my thinking, my hearing, my feeling, I'm treating the wrong condition. That's why I failed in therapy all those years. It wasn't until I met you, and you began to treat the real problem, the soul sickness. You gave me newcomers to work with, oh joy. Let me give you a metaphor about my problem, then I want to get into the answer. The book says that I suffer from an illness of the mind and the emotions. Here's how I like to describe it, if you will. I like to think of my... Has anybody else felt like a square peg trying to fit in a round hole? I've been that way my whole life. I think I was born that way. It didn't happen when I started drinking. Drinking relieved it. I've been feeling that way my whole life. I feel like a Rubik's Cube on full click and spin. Anybody else? It's like, oh my God, have you ever analyzed a Rubik's Cube? Have you ever tried to solve it? I got frustrated and hit it with a screwdriver and smashed it into pieces. Now it's apart. 27 little cubes. I'll tell you how to fix that. Just peel the colors off. And then it's all white. But if you're an alcoholic of my type, then you notice that the shades of white are different. Do you know if there's 27 little cubes? Let me give you a little math, if you will. 27 little cubes with six sides each, that's 162 independent sides. That leaves a possible combination, when you do the factoring process, of 34 quintillion combinations. That's a lot. And that's about how many old ideas I've got. And they're clicking and clicking and clicking and clacking and clacking and clicking. And here's how it works. I could be having a perfectly civilized conversation with Bob right there. Well, I wasn't having a civilized conversation, but I was talking to my sponsee, Greg. And Greg was looking right at me and talking, and I'm looking right at him listening. Actually, I'm listening to prepare my rebuttal. I'm looking right at him. And as we're talking, I noticed this girl walking over here. And I didn't want him to think I wasn't interested. So I kept an eye on her and him at the same time. And then I saw somebody talking over here, and I wondered what they're talking about. So now I'm watching her, him, and them, trying to make him think I'm still paying attention. But I'm right on him. I'm right at him. And then something else goes on. I got six different things going on, and I haven't taken my eyes off Greg. My eyes have glazed over, and he noticed. He said, "Hey, Spons, what? Did you hear what I said? I heard every word you say. What'd I say? Shut up. Don't confront me." Isn't that interesting? And emotionally, I'm a lot like a broken Maytag washing machine. I seem to have been born emotionally without a normal cycle. And I've been stuck on agitate and spin. Interestingly enough, lift the lid to the tub, pour in a couple of Budweisers, it balances the load. It ain't supposed to do that. I didn't know that. Alcohol produces an extemporaneous effect in me that science can't solve because it's spiritual. Do you know that the world is trying to treat the part that's arrested in me already? The disease is arrested in me. When I took my last drink, I didn't know this till I met you. When I took my last drink and the obsession lifted, the disease component of alcoholism was 100% arrested, but I continued to try to treat the disease. You know what I found out I'm left with? The 90%? The spiritual malady. And no amount of human willpower, no human power, probably, could relieve me of my alcoholism, of my spiritual malady. God, there's something wrong with me. I'm in AA and there's something wrong with me. I look around this room and the book says we are people who normally would not mix. I just, really. Duh. November 7th, 1977, my sponsor asked me if I would try to not drink just for one night. I've been going to meetings since November 3rd, 1972. It is now November 7th, 1977. And for the first time since I've known that man, he asked me to try to not drink for one night. He said, "Don't you think you can make it one night?" And in a moment of bluster, I said, "Yeah, I can stay sober a night. I can stay sober all I want. I'll give you my word." Now I'm screwed. Barney said, "Okay, I'll see you tomorrow at the noon meeting. You're going to help me set up." Okay? I said, "I'll be there. And I won't drink tonight." So about midnight, I realized it was a new night. It's a new day. I have a conflict. I know Barney's going to be rigid. I know he expects me not to drink all night. So I made it till about 7. I started heading to the noon meeting because he wants me there early, so I figured that's about 9 o'clock. You know how they are. Stopped and stole a 6-pack of warm Budweiser on the way. Sat on the front steps of my home group, the Moline group, about 9 o'clock in the morning. And opened up a can of beer and drank it. Ladies and gentlemen, if that isn't hopelessness, I don't know what is. I drank 2 more cans of warm Budweiser, waiting for my sponsor to show up, hoping I can get them all drank before he shows up or before Bob shows up, a real Bob. Big Book Bob, hated his guts. I prayed for him to die. He just wouldn't do it. Bob was one of those alcoholics that every time he shares, I'm in the front row, every time he shares, he has to say, the topic can be depression, and he will share, "My name's Bob, and I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober for 9,000 years. And since my very first meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink like Wayne." That's not what he said, that's what I heard. I'm sitting there thinking, you know, Bob, one might not hurt a little bit. So I'm sitting there, I've got 3 cans of beer drank, hoping I can get the rest down before Barney or Bob shows up. About 10 o'clock, Barney, you know how they are, the old timers, they're cocky. They got the answer and they know it. He walks up on me like John Wayne. I'm sitting there on the front steps of my home group drinking beer. How's that working for you? Now, Barney didn't look at the beer. He's an old-timer. He knows it's too late for that. Instead, he did something even worse. Looked me right in the eye, causing me to look at the beard. You know, I didn't feel guilty about that beard until Barney showed up. He didn't say nothing about the beer. Here's what he said. He said, "Why don't you come in and help me set up for the meeting?" I looked at the beer and said, "I'll be in a minute." I wanted to drink them. Does that sound like an honest desire? You bet I had one, but I couldn't get it done. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been sitting on the steps of the Moline Group. He knew that. He knew if I didn't have a desire to stop, I sure wouldn't be sitting on the steps of the Moline Group, whether I'm drinking or whether I'm not. Isn't that amazing how spiritually intuitive he was? So after that door slammed quietly shut, I immediately realized I wanted his approval. I was afraid he wouldn't like me if I didn't come in and help. You know how they are with their conditions. So I hid the other three cans of beer in the bush, in case Bob shares. We can't make nobody drink, but he made me thirsty. And I helped Barney set up for the meeting. Then I sit down at the arounder table. They won't let me sit at the newcomer bar. They don't want me infecting the newcomers with the disease. By the way, the arounder table is called the AA shoebox. It's where they put the slippers, sneakers, runners, and AA loafers. So I'm sitting at the arounder table. Barney's at the coffee bar with his new baby. He's been sponsoring him for 2 weeks, and I hate his guts. I want him to die. Because now he's getting all my sponsor's attention. Barney doesn't talk to me because I'm drinking. Bob's sober. Tom's sober 2 whole weeks. Oh, He's working on his 30-day chip. Oh. I voiced my resentment. Barney said, "Pray for him." So I did. He didn't die. I even told Barney that. I said, "Barney, God ain't working for me." I said, "You said pray, I did. He didn't kill Tom." He said, "Well, maybe you're shooting a little high." So I reduced my prayer request. I said, "Let's let him drink. I want my sponsor back. You hear me?" And then the door flew open and this guy stumbles over the threshold drunk. Now, I've only had 3 cans of beer. I was not drunk the night before. I was having a lucid interval. Barney's at the coffee bar with his new camera. I'm at the arounder table by myself. And this guy comes, and by the way, I've been going to meetings for 5 years now, and not once have I raised my hand and said, "I'm Wayne, I'm an alcoholic." Because I know once I say those 3 words, you own me. Somehow I knew that. But I didn't really believe I'm an alcoholic anyway. This guy comes flying in, face down on the floor. I saw Barney was busy with his newcomer, and I sure don't want him to have two. So I leapt into action. I did what Barney did 5 years earlier. I went up to this guy and helped him up off the floor. He was so drunk he couldn't, I had to help him stand up. And I says, this guy said, "Hi, my name's Wayne B. I'm an alcoholic." I didn't mean to say that. That's just what Barney said to me. I'm just trying to be like Barney. And I thought, well, it's too late now, and I'm going to be your sponsor. That's exactly what happened. I'm holding Jimmy up. We'll call him Jimmy. That's his name. Too late to change it now. I'm holding Jimmy up, and he goes like this. "What's a sponsor?" "I don't know. But I can't tell him I don't know. I'll lose credibility. And I ain't got no teeth. He's got all of his. I'm trying to think quick on my feet." And I just did what Barney did. I said, "Shut up." That's the truth. He goes, "Okay." I got my first one. I'm 2 hours sober. Barney overheard me say, "And I'll be your sponsor." He abandoned his newcomer. If I'd have known that's all it took, I'd have got me one quicker than that, I'll tell you. Just left Tom sitting all by himself at the bar. Now, I know what he wants. He wants to poach mine. Yeah, I got him. He's mine. I've taken possession of Jimmy. And the closer Barney gets, I move him behind me so Barney can't get after him. I know what he's doing. I've been around. I may not be very sober, but I've been around. Barney gets this far from my face. I didn't know it, but Barney held my life in his hands. He could have said some of this crap you hear today. You can't sponsor him till you've been sober a year. Have you heard that crap? Or how about this? You can't sponsor him till you've worked all 12 steps. You've heard that crap too. Can't find that in a book anywhere. Let's play a game. We'll call it early AA. Could you imagine back in December 1934 when Bill took his last drink and there was no answer? Bill took his last drink. Dr. Silkworth suggested he might pass it on. Go give the medical answer to people. Go give them the medical facts. Go talk to them. For 6 months, he went after. He didn't wait for them to call him. He went after him for 6 months, and none of them made it. None of them were staying sober. Can you imagine what we say to Bill Wilson today? Bill, you got to hurry up and write that book so you can sponsor people. Bill, you got to hurry up and work those steps. You got to talk to Bob on June 10th. One guy hung himself in Bill's house. We'd probably say, Bill, that ain't what we mean by hanging there. Ladies and gentlemen, let's not treatmatize AA. I got no opinion about outside resources, none of my business. Our traditions say we neither endorse nor oppose, but the fellowship is being treatmatized, ladies and gentlemen, and it's our responsibility to make sure AA stays right here. I've been Greg's sponsor for 126 days. You know what my responsibility is to him? I can't keep him from drinking. My responsibility is to give him an undiluted, unwatered-down perception of Alcoholics Anonymous so he can build a solid foundation for which he's going to live the rest of his life. That's my job. Anybody else? You bet. And I take that gladly, that responsibility. You know why? Because my sponsor did it for me. He didn't water this down a bit. He gave me what was in this book and what's in this 12 and 12, and he said, this is the answer for what ails you. You're an alcoholic of my type. If you are, this is, and you know what? I got to tell you something. Oh, what a good man he was. And you know what? I've betrayed that sometimes because sometimes you got to get caught up in the panoply of life. Things sound good. I walk into a meeting and I see a picture of Bill and Bob. And I see my picture floating up between them. You know what my sponsor whispered in my ear when I thought he was going to take Jimmy away from me? He said, dummy. I said, don't talk to me like that in front of my sponsee. I said, what? He says, do you mind if I co-sponsor him? What's that? No, you can't. He's mine. I found him. That's not what I said. That's what I thought. I said, okay. Now, here's what Barney said to me and Jimmy. You two clowns. If you expect to stay sober, you get out of here right now and go find some newcomers and get them back in here. Grab them. So we did. We grabbed them all. We went looking. We didn't know where to look, and we didn't find it necessary to talk to our sponsor. We had a group unconscious meeting. And we knew where they were. They were in taverns, right? We didn't know what was wrong with us. We just knew that him and I weren't drinking. So we went to taverns, and we tried to bring lucid, sober people in taverns to AA, but they got physical. So we changed tactic. And we would go later and get the people with their head on the bar. They were easier to maneuver to AA. You could be drunk at Larry's Oasis at 10 p.m. and your head's going to pop up at the midnight meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous at the Moline Group. And that's what me and we didn't know what to do, but our sponsor had our back. They let us sponsor people. We didn't know what we were doing. We had no clue. They helped us. Isn't that powerful? Because you see, this isn't about learning anything until you do it. This isn't about becoming therapeutical. This is about one alcoholic carrying the message of recovery to yet another alcoholic for no dues or fees, for fun and for free, said Chuck. There's five words in the doctor's opinion that altered the course of my life just a couple of years ago when I was getting ready to print and sell a book. And when I read it, I couldn't do it. I sure wanted to. And I'm not passing judgment. I'm reporting about this alcoholic. There's five words. The entire absence of profit and motive. Put that in your basket at night. Now, for this alcoholic, I couldn't do it. I'm talking about me. And I'll tell you why. Because I don't trust people making money off this thing. Because I don't know that you're really sincere about me. Isn't that something? I don't mean no judgment. I just know that the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I travel around the world as do all these folks. And I am concerned. I want us to stay that simple little program that you brought to me. Where just one alcoholic, no bigger, no smaller than me, says to me, I know how you feel. I've been where you are. And you don't got to pay to work the steps. You've already paid in full. Isn't that something? Wow. I'm going to tell you about this. November 8th, I took my last drink. Me and Jimmy both celebrated 29 years last November 8th. Seventeen of the first 30 people we sponsored are still sober. The other 13, I think we killed. We did the best we could. You know, the beautiful thing about AA, trying is enough. One of our speakers alluded to that. In here, we try. Out there, when I went through a program, they said, trying's lying. It's the best I can do. It's all I got. That was good enough for you. Will you try? I remember when my sponsor put me on make your bed therapy. You ever had that done to you? I had to call my sponsor and check in. This is in Moline, Illinois. He says, I'd like you to make your bed. I said, piece of cake. For 7 days, I called him. He says, your bed made? Yes, sir. Lied right through the phone. And then on the 8th day, I called him and he wasn't there, which is really unusual. He was always home to take my call. It rang and rang. This is before cell phones and recorders. It rang and rang and rang, and I thought he's abandoned me after 8 days. I put the phone down. I no more got that phone down, and there was a knock on my door. I thought, I wonder who's out there. I went to the door as my sponsor. He never calls on me. He comes walking in. He says, how you doing? Come on, I'm going to help you make your bed. Because he knew I wasn't making my bed. What's that got to do with sobriety? Shut up. Thanksgiving 1977, my sponsor took me to my first convention. I had no idea I was going to meet folk like you. He told me there's 1,200 people going to be at that meeting, and they're all going to be looking at you. Now, he didn't say, dummy, you smell, you need a bath. He didn't say, dummy, you've had them socks on for 3 weeks, let's go change them. He didn't say, your mouth smells, you know what he said to me? He says, dummy, I said, yes, sir. He said, AA is a program of attraction. And you are quite the distraction. He says, would you mind if I buy you a new set of clothes? Not at all. So he took me to Salvation Army, his idea of a department store. This was November 1977. The only clothes they had in supply, the disco era was out at Studio 54. It was in at the Salvation Army. There was racks and racks and racks of disco clothes. Nobody else was wearing them but newly sober AAs. He took me in there and he bought me a lime green double knit polyester leisure suit. The inside lining was bright yellow, had dark green tennis rackets. It was a promotional leisure suit. He bought me a shirt, a disco shirt, brushed polyester. Had two buttons, one here, animals around it, collars down to hair, made me wear a tie with it. Took me to the shoe department, and the only 13.5-inch gunboats they had in supply was a pair of black and brown box-toe Oxford disco platform shoes. I went in there 6'3", I came out 6'8". He took me to that convention, stood me at the front door, and made me a greeter. That was a vision for you. The speakers was a guy by the name of Chuck C. Norm Elpe. Dottie Shore. Clancy I. Johnny H. And a guy by the name of Tom Brady from Charlotte, North Carolina. Now, Johnny H. had been in prison, I heard. Well, he heard about me with the gun with my sponsor. And he patted me down. I think he wanted to see the inside of that suit's what I think he wanted to see. He's laughing, hurting my feeling. Chuck, he took one look at this. He opened it up like this and goes, Dee! Laughing. Dottie kissed me on the forehead. I could feel her lips moving in laughter. Clancy couldn't wait to get up there to do his little laughing. Tom Brady tried not to, but he gave in. Finally, I couldn't take it. Tears are rolling down my face. I turned to my sponsor and I said, God damn it, buddy, are they laughing at me? He took a step up and he looked at me, right in the eye. He says, well, yeah. Yeah, they are. You're a vision to behold. I mean, I am bawling. He says, you know what, dummy? I said, what? He says, if you ever learn to laugh at yourself, you'll never be left unamused. Where's the love? And they got me. I thought I became obsessed with AA, and I now know that's not true. Lots of people have tried to tell me I'm obsessed with AA. Now I know the difference between love and obsession. Obsession hurts, love doesn't. Obsession hurts, love heals. And I have not been hurt by being in AA with you. You hear me? And I fell in love with you guys that weekend. I never once imagined that God would use me to do what I get to do in AA today. See, I don't see myself as nobody special in AA. I'm just a drunk, one drink away from a drunken disaster and a hell of a lot of debauchery. I even got store-bought teeth for y'all tonight. I'm 29 years sober, 5 months and a few days, one day at a time. And you want to know what the biggest thing that I think about? I tell you, I had a fear. Yeah, I got time for this. I was filled with fear. Anybody else? I was so afraid. I had no power of my own. I was so afraid. And I didn't want to do this part of service because I was afraid, and I couldn't tell you what it was because I was afraid you'd laugh at me, even sober. I mean, I'm sober a long time, and I'm afraid you're going to laugh at me still. It takes time. If you're new, the greatest gift we have is time, one day at a time. You know what I was afraid of? I was afraid that my false teeth would come out when I'm talking. And on June 10th, 2000, I was invited to carry the message at Founders Day in Akron, where there's only 15, 18,000 people. Found out I was sharing Saturday night. I was horrified. Called my sponsor, and he made me do it anyway. Dick M was the taper. He told me to get on my knees and get out there and talk and quit worrying about it. You know how they are. So I get out there, and I'm feeling the love. It starts to get me, and then I soon saw my picture floating up between Bill and Bob. It's Founders Day. Ooh. Bill and Bob are dead. There's room for me. And about halfway through my talk, I became brave. Thought, I'm going to make a point. And I made a point. And some air got underneath my upper denture and blew it right out of my mouth. Now, when good things happen, it goes like this. When it's bad, it goes like this. I was literally watching my upper denture go like this. But I need to tell you, I caught it right there. And I got it back in and I didn't miss a beat. Now see, a lot of people come to AA and they get college degrees. Hell, I caught my teeth. That's what I got going for me. My time's up. I love AA. When I say I love AA, what that means is you're AA. Now, some of you I like a lot more than others. I've seen some of you shift during this time. Some of you is wondering, when I first came in here, I saw you. But I got to tell you something. AA has that necessary power that I always needed to not drink and to feel a part of. And I got to tell you, I feel a part of here. And I'll tell you why. Because when I share my pain, you laugh as though it's funny. Because I know you're laughing at your own pain. And you allow me to stay with you. And because I'm not paid to do this, I don't want nothing. I learned a valuable a while back. The bunch of us have been together many times. And me and Billy and Larry and Ellen and Mary Pearl and Bev. We've all been together before, and Donna. We've all been together before carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we have a rip-roaring good time. We all so sick. That's what we got in common. We got that in common. So if you're new, I want to invite you into Alcoholics Anonymous. Please don't judge AA by my presentation tonight. For whatever it's worth, as hard as I try, what I've got today is one day of sobriety. When I go to bed tonight, if I'm sober, it's a victory. You hear me? It don't get no bigger than that. And let's all join together, please, and stand by the door of AA, and let's keep AA singled in its purpose, so that when that newcomer child of mine finds his way here, and I hope to God he does, it'll be here and he'll get the same treatment I got, unconditional love and acceptance, and time to get well. Thank you for letting me be with you this weekend. Let me be with you this weekend.